Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
You asked for it. Here it is. It's a podcast from Apathetic Enthusiasm.
In this episode, we are letting the spice flow and talking about the eternal Dune and other such things. It's Apathetic Enthusiasm. I outlasted the music. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
It's fine. We'll let your spice flow like a desert stream. We'll let your spice flow.
We're just going to do spice puns.
Baron Harkonnen and scream.
Hello, everybody. I'm Travis.
Hey, everybody. I am Brandon Cruz, and welcome to your latest episode of Apathetic Enthusiasm. It is Apathetic Enthusiasm episode 197?
Eight.
198.
Eight, my friend.
Oh, my.
198. Two away. Two away from the big 200.
And let me tell you, we have got a magnificent show for the 200th episode.
We did so much work for this podcast.
Yeah.
So for you.
We're going to have.
We didn't enjoy a minute of it.
We're going to have so many guests for the 200th episode. I just want to prepare you. Star-studded cast.
Could you prepare me? Because I have no idea who you're talking about.
Yeah, I'm gonna get audio from some of our greatest guests of this that we've interviewed for this show. I'm gonna say, Chelsea, can we record your dad just talking to me on the front porch so we can include Mitch Schauer, creator of the Angry Beavers, on the show for the 200th episode? I'm not promising anything. We might have Robbie Askew from Rounding the Bases.
Not from Rounding the Bases, Apathetic Enthusiasm podcast.
The Robbie Askew.
Man, that's one of my favorite people on that podcast.
By far. There's a handful of podcasts out there that I listen to, that being one of them, and Robbie's voice soothes me into complacency. It is so great.
You almost steer into oncoming traffic while listening to it because it's so soothing.
I do. But then check this out. When the police come and stop me, they say, "What the fuck is going on?" And I say, "Rounding the Bases." And they say, "Robbie Askew, he's my jam.
We love that guy."
And then we take pictures over by the Amtrak.
We laugh and laugh. All right, if you wanna follow this podcast, for starters, God bless you. Thank you so much for doing that. We're on Twitter at Apthusiast. I'm at Jugglemino. He's at Barnyard Cruz. He tweets way more than me. You should follow him. Facebook.com/apathetic enthusiasm. Follow us on Facebook. Email us. Let us know your favorite of our 200 episodes at apatheticenthusiasmshow@gmail.com. Follow us on Instagram, apathetic_enthusiasm, or go to our website, apatheticenthusiasm.com, where you can find this podcast and Interdimensional RSS and Rounding the Bases and all sorts of. I forgot what it's called. Submitted for your approval. The Twilight Zone podcast. That's out there too. All right. We are stream. You forgot what it's called too.
I have. I haven't done an episode of that show in over a year. And let me just say this. There is right now. There's a not a not an OnlyFans, not a Patreon.
Better not be.
A Kickstarter.
We should see more money if you're doing an OnlyFans.
There's a Kickstarter out there for a Rod Serling statue in his hometown of Binghamton by Nicholas Parisi, who is one of the heads of the Rod Serling Foundation. It's out there, and I want to get back into recording episodes of Submit for Your Approval, but let me tell you, it is really hard to motivate myself to get back into it because I know it's an investment of time.
Well, you're doing other shows. I understand that. I occasionally throw on a Twilight Zone episode, and I obviously think of you every time I do because you're the biggest Twilight Zone fan I know. So then I'm like, oh, maybe I'll talk to him about this, and I'll be like, man, probably won't.
it's possible that we just that Submitted for Your Approval just turns into me and you talking about Twilight Zone because I need somebody to. to talk about all this stuff.
Yeah, there you go. That's the future of this podcast. 201 is Submitted for Your Approval. we are streaming live right now, believe it or not, over at twitch.tv/apathetic enthusiasm. If you want to be part of the show, be in the chat communicating, especially with this podcast, we can get derailed at any minute. So make sure to follow us over on Twitch. And then you can catch video versions of all of our episodes at youtube.com/apathetic enthusiasm. Thanks to everybody that has liked and subscribed and done all of those fun things over there. Finally, there are ways you can get merch. You can go to our TeePublic, apatheticenthusiasm.com/shop. Best way to get your own t-shirts with, I don't know, Apathetic Enthusiasm written on it. I think it's out there.
Yeah.
You can also support all of our podcast endeavors at patreon.com/apatheticenthusiasm. Thanks to all the patrons. We appreciate your support. Brandon, so much to discuss. I mean, we already had a killer pre-show where we talked about sour beers and
that was such a great pre-show.
It felt good. We just rolled right into it.
And now let's kill all the energy for the actual episode.
Let's drop it on down.
Dropping it all down.
Now let's talk about movies.
Speaking of dropping it all down, we recorded a new episode of Rounding the Bases yesterday with Robbie and Matt. And
Robbie and the other guy?
And by the way, follow them on Twitter at Rounding the B. It was such a downer episode. We talked about Aaron Rodgers, about how much of a narcissistic diva piece of crap he has been in that last little bit. Then we talked about...
Yeah, his backup did me no favors on my fantasy team.
No, nope, 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 nope. Then we talked a lot about the unfortunate accident in Las Vegas. Tina Tintor was murdered, essentially, by a former Los Angeles Raiders wide receiver. Las Vegas.
Sounds about right.
Raiders.
Las Vegas. Yep.
Yeah. And then a concert. So it was a very downer episode.
Then a concert where 8 people died.
Yeah, it was awful. And it was a downer. It was kind of a downer episode.
And now we're starting this one off on the same note. Way to go, Brandon.
I'm trying. I'm thinking about it. I'm like, I don't know how much of that episode I want to edit and put out there because it's just like there's normally you can get entertainment out of stuff, right? But when a majority of it is just being like, yeah, people died.
Well, mark my words, that will be your most downloaded episode to date. And everybody be like, this is the format. This is what we got to do. Everybody loves true crime. It's a podcasting staple.
We're talking about modern true crime. As a matter of fact, the modern true crime is what happened this week
is
in the papers.
Manslaughter.
That's awful. That's awful.
That's awful. It's terrible.
It's awful. It's awful. You're an awful person.
Yeah. And so is everyone else in the
rounding
world.
Rounding the B.
Check out Rounding the Bases. Matt is just shocked in the chat right now. He was not prepared for us to come in this hot tonight.
No.
All right. Let me break it down. Let me bring it down just a minute. For all of you listening, if you are a fan of this podcast, you and the 12 other people that listened last time, you will know that we had a challenge, right? We decided in advance on the format for this episode. This was going to be a Dune extravaganza, pronounced exactly like that, right? And so about 2 weeks ago, Brandon was working his way through the 1984 David Lynch version of Dune. And this was just before the brand new 2021 version of Dune was released. So the agreement that we made is that Brandon would watch that original version of Dune and then watch the new version. I would watch the new one first and then watch the older version. And then we would have this discussion. Neither of us have read the books, mind you. But provide our perceptions about the story of Dune and how these films sort of take the exact same story, the same source material, and present them in different ways, and how our feelings about the story would differ. First off, Brandon, did you do your homework?
I did do my homework, yes. I watched Dune 1984 first, and then this on Saturday when I flew back in from Florida, I watched Dune 2021 on my phone.
Just as the filmmakers intended.
Yes,
but when they're filming these epic cinematic images, they're like, someone's gonna watch this in seat 1A on an airplane on their phone.
1A
while they enjoy their free upgrade from American Airlines.
How let me ask for our listeners, I want to take a little bit of a side. Travis, how did you remember what seat I was sitting on the plane?
Because it's the first seat. 1A. It wasn't like, oh, you were in 3B or something. Like you were practically steak sauce. You were reverse steak sauce. Like it was, I mean, yeah.
It couldn't be any closer to the exit.
Were you first off the plane?
No. Because 1A is the window seat. 1B is the aisle.
There you go.
Remember that. Remember that for all our first class listeners. And you're all our first class listeners. Yeah. I was first class
in our book.
I put on my airline adventure story real quick. I put in a week ago for an upgrade. You know, and I put in my miles. I had enough miles to put in for an upgrade, but I always get put on the waiting list, and I'm always like 5th or 10th on the waiting list. Always from there. The morning
always
of the
bridesmaid.
Never a first class. The morning of, I kept refreshing my app. I was still 5th. Actually, no, I was 4th when I started looking at it. And then I refreshed it maybe 20 minutes before the flight, and I went down to 5th. I was like, how did that piece of shit get above? Doesn't matter. I was like, okay, I'm resigned to my seat. Literally on the opposite end, on the opposite side of the plane, I was sitting in 35D.
Dang,
that was my original seat.
Much different.
So we board. I get on the plane. I put my carry on in the overhead, and I'm sitting there. This woman comes down, another passenger, and I always pick the aisle seat. There's somebody that I kind of work with on the window seat, and we have a seat in between us. She comes down and she says immediately to the flight attendant, says, can I get an aisle seat? Cause she sees me and this guy. She's can I get an aisle seat? I just really want an aisle seat. I saw some aisle seats back there. And I had already gotten up out of my chair to let her in because I know that's where she's sitting. And the flight attendant says, we'll go ahead and check some stuff. Let me check. And I'm just standing up waiting. This lady immediately bitching. And
this was the person that was supposed to be sitting next to you.
Yes. Yes. Okay. And then I get tired of standing up. I sit down and we're just waiting for her to get a new seat. And this big American Airlines guy walks down the aisle and He walks up to me. He said, "Mr. Cruz." Like, yes. Like,
put that mask over your face or you're going to get kicked off this plane.
Get off the American Airlines has a very strict mask policy. He says, "Your new seat's 1A. There's carry-on space up there in the front. Just go get it and come on up." Like, oh, okay. There's your aisle seat, lady. I get my bag and I'm like, I got my backpack on and I'm like hitting people as I'm like holding the carry on. Also like, sorry. All the way to the opposite end of the plane again and into first class. And
yeah, that's a good feeling. That's a good feeling. I always joke with my wife because we are completely different travelers. When I get on a plane, 98% of the time, the AirPods are in and I am in my cone of isolation, like mm-hmm. the second I'm in my seat. And she will bring a book. She'll bring something to watch, something to listen to, and then never use it because she will spend the entire flight talking to her new single serving friend, right? Like right next to her. And I'm like, I don't know how you even do that. Like I never like strike up a conversation with someone. Now I'm not like a kind, unassuming, like, you know, blonde girl like my wife is. Like she's just very easy to talk to. So traveling with a group from work, I have literally that like last seat. I am in the aisle back of the plane right next to the restroom, and I sit down and there's an older woman sitting next to me and we just start chatting about something, like I don't know if it was work or something. But very, very nice lady. And we just start talking and like we're just kind of having a nice conversation. And one of the guys that I work with, like he kind of tries to get my attention. He's like, "Hey, like, do you want to switch seats?" And I was like, "Why would he want my seat back here? Like, I don't get it." And I was like, "Nah, it's cool. It's fine." Like, actually having a nice conversation with someone for once on an airplane. And he's like, "No, they're giving us first class seats. Do you want to move?" And I was like, "Well, it's nice knowing you, lady." And just right up to the front. I mean, and that was probably the only time I've ever definitely didn't talk to anybody in first class. I was like, "Nope, locked in, AirPods on."
There's too much space in between the seats.
Yeah, you actually have to yell to even you know, hear the other person.
"Hey, let the flight attendant know that I want a Bloody Mary.
I'll write you a postcard. Just put it up." Anyway,
first class has its own postal service.
Yes, that's right. It's airmail. In the air. Yeah. So anyway, we're going to talk about Dune. And then if we get enough time, if we don't get completely derailed, we also went and saw a little movie called The Eternals, the new Marvel flick, only in theaters, premiered this weekend. We will try to get to some of that. We will try to keep that towards the end of the podcast so that if we get into spoiler territory and you haven't been able to watch it yet, can't promise you the same on Dune. If you're not up on your Dune, canon, well, this is your warning for that if you're holding off on that. And then Brandon threw a bunch of other stuff. He put business trips in the topics, so I think we kind of hit that one already.
Nailed it.
A little bit kind of came around from the other side there. Anyway, so let's get into Dune. Had prior to this last couple weeks, had you really exposed yourself to any of these movies or any games? I guess there was like a Dune RTS like back in the day. Had you had any prior Dune knowledge before, I don't know, this month?
No, I mean, not really. I knew that Dune, I think we talked about this a little bit last episode, last time we did AE. My uncle liked Dune. He watched Dune. I was aware of it. Like, here's my thing, just with lots of pop culture references, I know a lot about stuff I've never seen before.
Yes.
And Dune is one of those things. Like, I know it's all about spice. I know there's sandworms. I know it's a political intrigue. It's sci-fi political intrigue. It's not a Star Wars thing. It's not a,
it's funny that you say that, because the first thing Sheena said to me when I was like, hey, you want to watch this new Dune movie? She's like, oh yeah, somebody's saying it's like the new Star Wars. And I was like, get out. And I haven't seen her since. So hopefully she's doing well. But
divorce papers, first class mail.
All right. Reason number one, relating Dune to Star Wars. End of reasons.
I don't think any judge will throw that out. They'll be like, you know what? Full custody.
The spice must flow. And, yeah. Anyway,
divorce is a mind killer. Yeah. So I was aware of things, but I'd never seen the film. I knew it was directed by David Lynch way back in the day. There was a sci-fi movie that I knew came out maybe 5 years ago. I'm not actually sure. I didn't watch that. To be honest, Dune was something that I was never super motivated to see. Yeah. Right. Or experience. I knew that Frank Herbert wrote it. I knew all these things, but I'm like, well, that's good enough. Right.
Sure. Yeah. Something spice, something sandworms.
Yeah.
Beetlejuice. Got what? It.
Yeah. No, exactly. You point out Beetlejuice, but I always associated Beetlejuice sandworms to Dune. I just was like, yeah, like what a ripoff of Dune. Even though I'd never seen Dune, I was like, yeah, what a ripoff of Dune.
Yeah. Gosh.
What is your kind of exposure to Dune? Was it something you paid attention to?
Very much the same. Never watched or read any of the canon. I had a very pop culture level awareness. So same thing, hearing about spice. I would even make jokes about whoever controls the spice controls the universe. Like I'd make jokes like that, but I didn't really know what I was talking about. So when I heard that they were producing a new and updated presentation of the Dune story, I was really interested because, looking at the casting, looking at some of the trailers that came out, I was like, this looks fantastic. I'm going to give this a shot. And I even like over the summer this year was like, maybe I'll read Dune. Like maybe whether it's an audiobook, whether I pick up a copy at like an actual bookstore, maybe I'll read this in preparation for the movie. Turns out I didn't do that. but we'll get around to the books later. I'm interested in it now, after having watched both of these movies. So I want to start with you.
Okay.
In your experience of being exposed to the Duneverse, because you started with David Lynch, and for maybe a lot of people listening, if they were Dune fans or maybe they hated the original movie, they saw that movie first. So what was your take on how the film was presented? And I don't know, what were your first takeaways sort of seeing that film?
All right. Before Dune 2021 came out, maybe a couple weeks before that, Chelsea and the kid, they went to the grandparents' house, and I said to myself, I really, of just, scanning TV, right? Just to see what's on. HBO Max, see what's on HBO Max. And I kept seeing Dune 1984 on there. And I said, I haven't seen it. I should really watch it. I should see this film. And maybe the weekend before the new Dune came out, one of my coworkers it was the weekend of, because that day I did a VTC, a video teleconference. And I made a joke about, hey, Dune 2021's coming out. Everybody check it out. And this guy sent me a message later. He's like, Dune 1984, like, it's awful. I hated it. It made me mad, he said. And
okay.
He was just, he had read the novels. He had read up to Children of Dune, maybe, whatever the third novel is. And he just, it's awful. He said, you have to watch it just to see how awful it is. And that was the motivation to actually watch Dune 1984. So that weekend, I started watching it. Friday night, I put it on, and I was drunk, and so I fell asleep maybe about 20 minutes in. And I woke up. I woke up periodically, and I said, "Oh, I'm not going to remember this. Let's go ahead and stop it." The next night, I went back. Like it was like 40 minutes in. I take that back. 40 minutes in. Restarted it from that point in time. I started watching it, got another 40 minutes in, and then I was drunk, so I passed out again. I finished it that Sunday night, and by that Sunday night, I told Chelsea, I have to finish watching Dune.
I've got to get through it.
And it's not that I wasn't interested in it. It's strange, because David Lynch is weird in general, as you know.
Oh, yeah.
He's a strange director. He's got lots of imagery, lots of kind of dreamlike states to his directing. And I was interested in it. But the thing that I noticed most is I didn't, narrative wise, it was confusing what was going on a lot of times. It kind of like jumped around, and they had character internal monologues that kind of tried to help explain little bits, which I thought was kind of unique, because I'd never really seen that in a movie before. But for the most part, I'm like, I kind of understand what's going on, but I don't fully. He's a savior. There's a prophecy. He took over the prophecy. He awakened, and now there's water on Arrakis. That was kind of it.
Yeah, David Lynch being weird and sort of being more experimental, being more
avant-garde.
Yes, taking risks with his filmmaking. None of that's new, right? Like we have that base understanding. But there is it is a dense story. Like there is a lot going on. There's a lot to introduce there. So there is a lot of, what do you call it?
Exposition.
I kept wanting to say exploitation, and I'm like, that is not the right word. There's a lot of exposition in the 1984 Dune, where they are like certain lines of dialogue are just there for the benefit of the viewer. It's like, let me explain to you how our political system works, person that's grown up in this political system. So in that way, there are elements that are clunky, or and just the way it presents it, especially for a modern audience, I just don't know that it holds up as well with some of the other films that we're used to seeing now in 2021.
Yeah. And a reminder, I keep saying Dune 1984 just to distinguish between the two of them, but I think that's also an important thing to note as far as graphics go, as far as what we saw on screen, what David Lynch did with the film, because obviously when you get to the 2021 Denis Villeneuve, the visuals in this new one, they're far away different things. Let's go into the new one real quick, and I'll turn it over to you because that's the first one that you saw.
Yeah, I mean, a feast for the eyes, right? I did not watch it on my phone. I did just slightly better by watching it on my TV at my house.
I wanted to call you out, like, oh yeah, because the filmmakers intended to watch it at home, didn't they?
Yeah, no. I was at the movie theater the other day for Eternals, and I saw Dune in a few different theaters, and I was like, I bet it would look real good.
I bet it looked real good up on that screen. Because visually stunning movie for sure.
I just want to make a quick aside there. We're going to talk about Eternals maybe just a little bit later, but I was texting you as I was driving to Universal City Walk in Orlando, and I had time before I was going to hang out with one of my friends that night, and I said, should I see Dune on the big screen? And you're like, well, I'm seeing Eternals right now. And that's what kind of motivated me to go see Eternals instead.
Let's go to the tape. Let's review that conversation. Hey, should I see Dune or Eternals? Not should I see Dune right now. The question was, should I see Dune or Eternals? And my response while in the film was, I'm at Eternals right now. And you said, Eternals it is. So don't act like I twisted your arm.
No. I'm not saying you twisted my arm. I'm just saying that I was driving. I was driving
also,
and I was texting.
Also, it's HBO's fault that they made Dune available on HBO Max. The box office will take a hit. There's just no question.
There's no question. But I did want to see Dune on the big screen because yes. the visuals, right? Because Denis, he directed Blade Runner 2040 whatever. Yep. And that was a beautiful film. So I wanted to watch Dune on the big screen.
Yeah.
But when you said you were in Eternals, I'm like, okay, that answers that. That it gives us something else to talk about for AE, which is right now.
Let's give them something to talk about.
Anyway, so you watch it on your TV.
So new Dune, mm-hmm. 2.5 hour movie. Watched it all in one go. Again, same source material, right? So we have, you know, box office, big name actors, Timothée Chalamet. Is the main character. What's his name?
Paul Atreides.
But I mean tons of big names. You've got Zendaya, you got Poe Dameron, you've got
Duke Leto.
Khaleesi. Khaleesi's the what's
from Game what's of Thrones.
The, yeah, what's the guy's name?
I'm looking at the Eternals cast
Aquaman.
List right now.
Aquaman.
Jason Momoa.
Yeah, but what's his name in Khal Drogo? That's it.
Khal Drogo, yeah. Duncan Idaho is his name in the film.
You've got all these big names, right? You've got Drax. You've got
Batista.
You got all these folks. But the reality is like this movie, which again, title card comes up, Dune, subtitle part one. Oh, we got a multi-part story here. Ooh, get your game face on. A lot of information, all these different houses, this whole interstellar government. There's still a lot of exposition about what spice is, why it's important, who all these different people are, who the, what are they called?
Jeez. The Fremen,
who they are, why, like what their lives are like, all these things. Right. And so to me, very entertaining film, very interesting, but also a little bit of work to be like, okay, all right, I got to remember who these people are. I got to remember what their relationship is to these people. I got to remember why these people left, because at some point Sheena's going to ask me these questions and I'm going to have to, remember so that I can keep her engaged with the film. And that only happened a few times, but no, I did enjoy it. I think overall, the new Dune is a good movie. There is a lot to unpack. There are some, you know, still strange concepts within it, but overall, beautifully presented, cool story, really, I thought, and a really good way for me, who has not read the book and do not know the details that I am lacking, having only seen these films. But I walked away from that movie being like, this was good. I really liked it, which took me into the David Lynch 1984 version on a high. I was like, all right, I like Dune because of what I've seen so far. Let's see how that stacks up against the 1984 version.
So that was your mindset going into 1984. You're on a high from 2021. You're like, oh, this is what the film is about. This is what the story is. Here's the characters. Okay, I'm prepared for whatever 1984 has in store for me. What were you preparing yourself for as far as watching the new film? Were you like, okay, let's see what the differences are. Let's see.
Obviously, I expected more dated special effects. I mean, the second David Lynch's name comes up on screen, I'm like, okay, it's going to be a little bit more, you know, artistic, a little bit more, symbology, like a little bit more like high concept at times. But yeah, I don't know. I think I was really looking to see how they would tell the same story for the most part. And I think this is probably the mindset I have anytime I go into any sort of remake or retelling of the same source material, is what aspects of it are they going to present or prioritize in this version versus something else? So, which you can really only do when movies are based on a book, and like if it's just like a remake of another movie that was an original screenplay, then it's like, all right, well, they just did their own version of this movie, but the movie is the source material. But yeah, I was pleasantly surprised in some ways with the David Lynch version of it, because you could really see where they pulled things directly from the source material, like because they were so common, or because even certain scenes played out so similarly that I was like, oh, okay, so this must really be how it is in the book, because they were both so similar in how they portrayed it in the movie. I don't know. What did you feel like after the 1984 version? You had a good understanding of this story and this universe to give you a different perspective looking at the new 2021 version?
So what I'll say is, going into the 2021, after seeing 1984, being kind of digesting it a little bit, I had a week before I watched it on the plane coming back to Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And, you know, thinking about, okay, Paul Atreides and Duke Leto and all the stars in the original one, all the stories that was going on, and like going back in time and piecing it together, like, okay, what is the story that's actually being told? And going into 2021, I said to myself, all right, let be open-minded, see what's going on with this story now, and just kind of prepare myself for updated graphics, updated cinematography, acting, sound design, all that type of stuff, right? Because CGI is now in its heyday. And I was on my phone, but you know, it's an iPhone Pro, you know, it's good, it's pretty good screen. I had my iPods on, and you're absolutely right as far as some scenes played out so similarly that I thought, is this just an homage to the 1984, or is this actually from the source material?
Yeah.
There's a few things that are so similar, lines that are so similar, interactions that are similar. Giving Ueda giving the tooth to the Duke as he's being betrayed.
Yeah. That was totally a scene that I was like, oh yeah, this is like just like the other movie I just watched. Yeah,
right. And almost looking for those scenes to happen in the 2021 version. I was waiting for the scene where Paul and his mother are trying to get to solid ground. I was waiting for that scene to happen the entire movie in 2021, and then it happened. And I'm like, this is a good movie. In many ways, here's how I feel about it overall. They're very good movies to pair together.
Yeah, in some ways they are, right? And one of the things that's interesting for me, and I thought about you when I watched the 1984 version, is the 1984 version goes further in the Dune story than this new 2021 version does. It stops short of where the 80s version continued. And again, part one, we don't know how many parts they have planned for this film series, but it was interesting for me to see that in the David Lynch version and be like, oh, like this movie's still going. Mind you, it felt more like a rushed montage in the David Lynch version as they wrap up certain things, and they probably rushed through certain parts that they could probably expand on quite a lot more. But I was thinking for you, like, are you going to be ready for this 2021 version to end when it does, or are you going to expect it to hit like a certain story beat, a certain plot point before it actually is going to?
That's a fair question. And I think reading into the movie before it came out or after it came out, knowing that they're coming out with a part two, also knowing that they have at least three books, I think five Dune books overall.
Yeah, I don't know.
I know that there's an expansion of story, and the pace of this new film, I knew that they're going to have to end it shortly, right? I knew that it wasn't going to get all the way to the end of where David Lynch's film got to. I was okay with it. I was waiting for that. Where is a good point to end this part one? And when Paul meets the Fremen, it's kind of that encapsulation of the story of him dreaming about Zendaya, getting to that point in time, then meeting her, you know, doing the duel, whatever, and being accepted into the Fremen. And then when I saw the Fremen riding the sandworm, I'm like, okay, this is where it's going to end. Sure enough, that's where it ended.
Yeah.
What was interesting to me in that point, mentioning the riding the sandworm, as far as abbreviating the content for the David Lynch stuff, it seemed like Paul was the first one to ever ride the sandworm in the 1984 thing. But really, it's just like the Shai Hulud, which is like the king of the sandworms. That's where the prophecy was fulfilled. So I'm expecting we'll see that in part two.
Yeah, I found it really interesting watching the 84 version after having seen the 2021 version. My base understanding for all of the different houses and all these different families and things like that was already pretty set. So then it was more of just, all right, how are they telling the story versus, oh, I got to figure out, oh, okay, who are these guys again? And what, which I feel like if I had watched the 84 version first, I may have had a harder time with. Like, I don't know. I don't know. Who's to say? We'll never know. We'll never know. I don't know. I ended up, I think, liking the 1984 version more, appreciating it more, because I had that external reference point. If I had gone to that one first, I probably would have been like, all right, this is weird, and then not expected as much out of the new version. But
in some ways, we kind of alluded to this already. 1984 is the Cliff Notes version of Dune.
Sure.
And in the sense that it is a bunch of kind of general ideas of what this universe is about, what this story is about. Maybe not edited greatly or cohesively or coherently as much as we would like. But then once you see Dune 2021, which is a part one of this universe, then it all makes sense, right? It's like it's like reading a Wikipedia entry for something where you say, okay, I understand everything that it's saying generally, But then you watch the fleshed out and you're like, okay, all right, this person is this, this person does that. This event happens, this changes this, and so on and so forth. Because in 1984, there's a lot of talk about the emperor. It shows the emperor, which is something I don't think is in the novel, in the first novel.
Yeah, like there's a lot of FaceTime with the emperor in the 84 version, and we don't see them at all in the new 2021 version.
Like it establishes so a difference between the two films is they don't show the emperor at all in the new film. In the first film, basically it kicks off with the emperor establishing what the betrayal is going to be. So in 2021, you kind of figure out through the narrative that, okay, the Harkonnens are coming off of Arrakis, the planet where the spice is being harvested. But the reason they're being pulled off is to put Duke Leto, the House Atreides, onto the planet because they're getting too powerful. So this is a intentional thing to betray them. And it gives a little bit of other background with like some random alien worm thing. But you don't see that in the new film. And
I think there's opportunities for them to revisit some of those other political aspects as they expand the story more and move forward with some of that. But yeah, I do like you said earlier, them being companion films, like it you do get other aspects of it. Or heck, read a book, people. Read a book, right? I would encourage anyone, if you have an HBO Max subscription, you can catch Dune there until November 21st. So I highly recommend it. If you've watched the 1984 version and you're like, yeah, I'm not so sure about Dune. I don't, or maybe you're a huge fan of the books, and you're like, yeah, no, they messed up that one movie. I don't think they can do it justice. I argue, give it a shot, check it out. I don't know. I think it's pretty good.
All right, Travis. Now here's my question for you, and it's not going to be an easy question to answer because of our different approaches to watching these two films. For somebody who's never seen either film before, which order would you recommend they watch it in? Obviously, you went one way, I went the other way. So I'm interested to see if it changes.
I think unless you're like a diehard Lynch fan who just happens to have missed the original Dune movie, I would recommend watching the new version first, because I think objectively, I mean, I think it's a better movie. I think it is presented better for a contemporary audience. And then I would recommend you go back and watch the David Lynch version. I think as a film, it's very interesting. I don't know, as a person that studied film for a brief moment in their history, like there are a lot of aspects of it that I find intriguing and compelling, and it's kind of weird, which is cool too. Like, so yeah, no, I recommend both, but I would recommend the order that I saw them in.
Okay. Well, to follow up on that, Travis, I'm not going to disagree with you. I think that is the right answer. I think because Dune 2021 is a good movie, and it's a movie that is digestible by masses, right? If you're interested in kind of this political intrigue, a sci-fi intrigue, then you'll be like, okay, you'll be interested in the story, you'll be interested in the visuals, and understand mostly what the story is trying to get at. And then if you want to watch Dune 1984, go into it kind of, okay, you know what the story is, it's going to be different, it's going to be a little weird, you're going to be tripped out with some stuff, but you will see what David Lynch was trying to get after. I do have a couple extra points with the David Lynch stuff. One is, I'd read that he was forced to trim it down a lot. It was originally a 5-hour movie, and that
tracks. Yeah,
he was forced to edit it down dramatically. Which makes sense because there's a lot of stuff where it seems like it skips around a lot, misses a lot of exposition. But for the most part, I still think it's David Lynch, but I think it's as good as it can get in that form.
Let's get the Snyder cut. Let's look at the Lynch cut.
Let's get the Lynch.
OG Dune.
Hashtag
come on,
Lynch cut.
Hatch.
We could get that trending easily.
Let's start it, dude.
And then the second thing, as somebody who fancies himself a fan of David Lynch in general, one of the things I've always said about David Lynch is he's got a fascination about dreams. It's in his work, this kind of recurring motif about dreaming. On Netflix, I think there used to be a short films of David Lynch, and one of those short films was The ABCs. I know we've talked about it on this show before. It's a short film where it's black and white, and it's this little girl saying the ABCs over and over again. And it's very creepy. It's very, very weird. And he said that the inspiration for it was one of his nieces had like a fever or something. And she just had this recurring nightmare where she's just repeating the ABCs over and over again. So that was one of his things. Mulholland Drive, in that film, if you've ever seen it, for our listeners who've ever seen it, about midway through the film, it completely switches. And the main character, played by Naomi Watts, kind of wakes up from a dream. And that's that, in my interpretation of it, it's all about the first half of the film is her dreaming about the bad shit that she's done.
Yeah.
Dreams are a David Lynch thing.
Sure.
And guess what? Dune, the sleeper is awakened. All these visions that Paul has throughout the film, 2021 and 1984 alike, it just fit in with David Lynch's kind of motif.
I understand why he gravitated toward the project. Like, having no understanding of how it actually came to be, I can see why. It was in his wheelhouse, right? Like it makes sense. So.
Now, last little bit, he was originally approached to direct Return of the Jedi and he turned that down to direct Dune instead. Who knew? We could have had a better version of Return of the Jedi.
let's get the Lynch cut of Return of the Jedi. With no Ewoks and
Lynch Jedi.
Yeah. And damn fine cup of coffee. all right. And I don't know. I think it's remarkable that we've gotten 51 minutes into this episode and have talked about little to no actual plot points of either Dune movie. I think that's okay. I think that's fine. I recommend you watch it. Go discover it for yourself if you're completely new to Dune. And then let us know what you think. Check it out on HBO Max, do those things, and then hit us up an email or a tweet or things like that.
Travis, before we go, I don't think we're going to be able to talk about Eternals. I don't think we're going to have time to talk about Eternals.
Which is so sad because that means it's going to be like 3 weeks after the movie came out for us to talk about Eternals. Can we do a short, like 10-minute spoiler free for those folks that haven't made it out to the theater yet? Just general like film review, like feelings of the movie. What did you think? Did you like it? Did you not like it? That sort of stuff.
We can. This next little bit won't take that long, and then we'll get into our mini review of the Eternals.
Okay. All right.
All right, Travis. Here's what I'm gonna do. Because we talked about Dune 1984 and Dune 2021, there are a bunch of actors in both films that are famous, that have been famous, have done famous things. And so I want to, trivia you into some of these things.
You want to test me on actor names, which I'm terrible at?
Yeah. Number one, Kyle MacLachlan played the role of Paul Atreides in Dune 1984, who he was also in what show?
Twin Peaks,
that's right. Kyle MacLachlan.
Damn fine cup of coffee.
David Lynch regular. He's been around. He's also
Blue Velvet. I looked that up while I was watching it, and I think this was like his first movie.
Oh. He looks old in that movie, doesn't he?
Yeah, it's like one of his earliest credits is Dune. So I thought that was really interesting.
And Timothée Chalamet also played him in 2021. Yeah. Let's see. Jürgen Prochnow played the role of Duke Leto in Dune 1984, who played his alternate in 2021. And
Poe Dameron.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Oscar Isaac.
Yeah.
Was Duke.
Yeah.
Leto.
Oscar Isaac. Yeah. That's
yeah.
It. Yeah. He's great.
All right.
I thought that there was some tremendous acting in 2021. Like I thought it was. I'm gonna watch it again. I'm gonna watch it again. Dang it! I'm a Dune fan now.
Okay, you know me. I'm big on knowing actors' names, and that was one of the other things that I was looking for parallels between the two films, which actor played which character, right? Mm-hmm. So Josh Brolin plays Gurney Halleck in Dune 2021. Which famous actor played this same character in the 1984 version?
Patrick Stewart.
That's right. Patrick Stewart. Nice. Yes. Look, I don't give you
enough credit, Brandon.
I don't give you easy ones. this one will be easy. The actor Richard Jordan played the role of Duncan Idaho in 1984. Who played Duncan Idaho in 2021?
Duncan was Aquaman.
That's right.
Arthur, I don't know, whatever his name is. What's his?
Yeah, Jason Momoa. You don't have
Jason
to say
Momoa. It. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry to all these actors. I know who you are. I know your faces.
All right.
Yeah.
So Chani.
I'm just surprised I'm getting the character names like for half of these.
Well, I mean, Duke Idaho.
Duke
Duncan
was the
Idaho.
Duke. Yeah.
Duncan Idaho is a dumb name. Yeah. Everybody knows that. Paul Atreides. Paul as a hero name.
Paul.
Dumb.
Hey, Paul.
Hey, Paul.
Yeah, you have another dream, Paul.
You got that spice, Paul?
Use the voice, Paul.
Okay, Chani, played by Zendaya in 2021, was played by this actress, Sean Young, in 1984. What other film was Sean Young in? And there's a bunch
Blade
of different ones.
Blade Runner.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's immediately what I said when she came. I was like, hey, it's a Blade Runner girl.
I would have also accepted Ace Ventura, Pet Detective.
Oh, Finkel and Einhorn.
Hey, pet dick.
Your gun is pressing into my hip.
All right. David Dasmalchian plays Peter DeVries in Dune 2021. He is one of Baron Harkonnen's minions. Brad Dourif played the role in 1984. Which famous horror movie icon did Brad Dourif play as?
He's going to get me on this one.
I am.
Famous horror movie icon.
I'll give you a hint. Small, a toy, use a knife.
Chucky?
Yeah, Brad Dourif is the voice of Chucky.
Voice of, okay, yeah. I was like, I was trying to like relate the actor. I was like, it's too big to be Freddy Krueger. It's maybe Jason. I don't know.
All right, this last question, we'll end it.
Sting.
All right.
Is it Sting?
It's not Sting. I thought about doing Sting. Okay. Well, okay. Two more questions. This one. Who played Sting's character in the new movie?
Nobody.
I can't trick you. I can't trick a trigger.
Nope. Nope. lock box up here.
Lock box. All right. This is the last trivia question I have about Dune 84 in 2021. Which character, and you don't need to know the character's name, which character is completely different from each other as far as actors?
Completely different.
Yeah.
I
left that vague for a reason.
Are you talking about the Modib or whatever? No, that's not it. The people that are like computery that like had all the memories and stuff.
You're thinking about like the witches, the witches type thing?
No, these are the people that like worked for the houses. In the 1984 version, you would know them by the red staining on their faces. They like held all the knowledge and stuff like that.
That is an answer. That's not the one I was thinking.
My confusion with that is you could tell when people were like that, but they did that in the new version by like having them roll their eyes like up into their head, like they were like processing something, and then they'd like come back with an answer. But I didn't notice like the red staining like at all. And so I was like, oh, that's weird. Like that they didn't bring that part over. Like the dude in the 84 version does the whole like you'll know me by this because I do this and I drink this or whatever. And you know, I was just like, this is all right, David Lynch. All right. Who's completely different? The Judge of the Change?
Yes. There you go, man. You nailed it. In 1984, Max von Sydow played the role of Dr. Liet Kynes.
I knew her as Princess Leia.
And Sharon Duncan Brewster.
To me, she was royalty, I think is the line that he uses.
Yes, played by a Swedish actor originally in 1984, Max von Sydow, famous actor, Sir Max von Sydow, and played by Sharon Duncan Brewster in the new one, a female.
Dude, I just realized I had the entire cast listing for both movies up in different tabs, and... Man, I should have clicked over. It would have been less fun. It would have been less fun that way.
You should have cheated. Anyways, that's all I've got for the cast list trivia between the two films. So honestly, I think it's awesome. Both of them play together very, very cohesive when you put them together. Compendium.
Good compendium. All right. Moving on. All right. Eternals is out. The MCU lives on. I mean, we had video games and other stuff to talk about, but let's do a quick slap at Eternals. Spoiler free. If you are not tracking Eternals, this is the introduction of a whole new crop of superheroes. The Eternals were ancient aliens who have been living on Earth in secret for thousands of years. Following the events of Avengers Endgame, an unexpected tragedy forces them out of the shadows to reunite against mankind's most ancient enemy, the Deviants. Right off the top, what were your thoughts walking away from Eternals? Did you walk away like, cool, I liked it? Were you let down in any way? How did you feel leaving the theaters?
I met up with a friend from Tampa that night after I'd seen the film. Him and his son, who's in college, asked me, "What'd you think of the movie?" And here's my answer to that. I like the movie, but it is not a lot of the reviews say it's a Marvel film. It felt like a Marvel film, but honestly, I didn't feel like it felt like a Marvel film. I felt
it did not feel like a traditional MCU movie. To me, yes. Either. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It normally Marvel films, they have quips a minute. Everyone's joking with each other. There is some comedy in here, but it is not.
Kumail in there. Like you cast Kumail in the movie. You can't not have some comic relief.
Yeah. Yeah. But for the most part, it doesn't feel like an MCU film. I did like it. I did kind of like the change of pace. It was a well shot film, but I do get some of the critiques for it. What'd you think?
Very, very similar thoughts. If you're going into this expecting an Avengers movie, you will be let down. This much like I felt with every movie in the current phase, the post Thanos phase of the MCU, they are rebuilding, they are restructuring, they are moving into a new period, a post Thanos period, and that requires introducing new characters, introducing new ideas, new elements, expanding the mythology of the MCU, which again is all rooted in Marvel Comics, but that is such a vast like catalog of options of things that they can get into that, yeah, this, I mean, outside of some offhand mentions of, oh, now that Steve Rogers is gone, who's going to run the Avengers? Oh, I could do it. Blah, blah, blah. Like that. Those are all of those. I think they mentioned DC characters more in this movie than they do other MCU characters. Like yeah. It's so there's. Don't expect like, you know, Black Widow to show up. RIP Black Widow's gone. Don't expect, you know, Shang-Chi to roll through a scene and all of a sudden them be buddying up. They don't go to Doctor Strange for help at some point in time. This is very much an original story about a new set of superheroes that will play into this new phase, but this is their introduction. This is about them. So just like that, those early MCU movies where you got, you know, Captain America, the first Avenger, and it was about Cap and it was about his story. I think that's more of what this is. And it was told in a slightly different tone, a different way. Still great action sequences, still really good world building to a degree, but it's a little different. And I think that's okay.
I agree with you. It's almost a similar departure in a different way as like Ragnarok was or Guardians of the Galaxy was, in like it went and explored a different aspect of the universe with a different tone. This tone of this film is a serious tone. It has comedy.
I mean, it's got comedy in it, but for the most part, it's more serious. Yeah,
right. It's about being connected to people, connected to others, and having love for each other. Even if we at our cores disagree with philosophies and differences of opinion and political opinion or you know, the larger existential pieces, we are still connected at our core to each other.
Yeah.
And going into the end of the film, again, I'm not going into spoilers, like even though there are villains and they're heroes, we're all still connected by being a part of each other. And I don't think that is something that the MCU has really explored much. At least
recently, they certainly haven't. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. A wide cast. Angelina Jolie is in there. Kit Harington from Game of Thrones. Richard Madden from Game of Thrones. Gemma Chan. Salma Hayek. Don Lee, who is in a great Korean horror film called Train to Busan. What a badass. Barry Keoghan. I said Kumail Nanjiani. We've talked about him. Lauren Ridloff. Leah McHugh. Brian Tyree Henry. Just so many folks in here.
Oh, yeah. And fabulous, like, diverse casting, really, like, a lot of representation. That was the first thing Sheena said as we were leaving the theater, is she was so excited because Sheena doesn't do like we do and like read ahead or like, you know, kind of dig into the movies at all before we go see them. But so she had no idea that one of the heroes was going to be deaf and that would, that would sign. Right.
Yeah.
And she was like, it's the most exciting thing for her was like, there are going to be kids who have never seen themselves like in one of these MCU superheroes because they're deaf or they sign, and to have somebody on the screen like representing them like is just, it's huge. And there are so many examples of that throughout this movie, which I thought was great. And I don't know, it made me emotional when we were talking about that, because it's like, yeah, like there's so many opportunities to continue to expand this universe and not just have, you know, four white dudes fighting in Central Park.
Yeah. Going back again to the thing I said, which is at our core, we all have our differences, but we're still connected by our humanity.
Right.
And,
a giant celestial.
Giant celestial. And I haven't seen many reviews that have really emphasized that bit of it. And it's unfortunate, because I think there's a deeper meaning to this film, even though I won't be like, yeah, I need to rewatch this annually like some other films. I think this has a deeper meaning to it than, you know, Iron Man 2 or Thor Dark World. Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. And obviously some huge teases, as is Marvel's way. In the mid-credit and post-credit scenes, for those of you that have seen the movie, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But exciting stuff. Always exciting, you know, nods to what's ahead in the MCU as it just continues to expand and move in different directions. And they're not all going to be wins, but for the most part, they all tend to be pretty decent. Like they tend to do a good job. So maybe, I don't know, in the post show or something, the two people that are left will get to hear us talk a little bit more spoilerific thoughts on Eternals. But I would recommend this. The critics have given it pretty harsh reviews on Rotten Tomatoes, and I think it's like 50 something percent critics wise. Audience score, I think, is much higher than that. But you know, I could actually look it up and give you real numbers.
Yeah, it's 48% on Rotten Tomatoes, 53% on Metacritic, 6.9 out of 10 on IMDb. 70 Google users, 79% like this movie.
Yeah, so 80% score from the audience, but 48 from the critics. So I don't know. It's not resonating with some of the critics, I guess.
I have to ask you this, the last question I'll ask you, and then we can close out the show. But the critique that is it's just another Marvel film. What do you say to that?
What do you say
when you fall in love?
I don't know, because especially for like, I don't have this deep collection of comics that deal with Celestials and Eternals, and like these are not characters that I grew up knowing about, so I didn't have a huge connection to them going in, and they were all of their different powers and things like that. It was all fresh to me. I love Marvel films, so I think maybe I was a little bit more forgiving to be like, oh yeah, cool, here's a whole new crop of heroes, and here's the stuff that they're doing. I get some of the criticism saying that it lacked an effective plot. I think half of the film has to spend time introducing you to a lot of new characters, and then also creating meaningful relationships between them. Mm-hmm. That by the time you start to establish those connections between them and give them something to actually fight against, it's like, well, we're 2 hours in, guys, like time to start wrapping it up. So in that way, like, yeah, it does in a little bit feel like, all right, here's just a bunch of new Marvel characters that we're going to roll out and not have like it, you know, it. The criticisms of heist movies where like most of them is just getting a crew together. It's got some of that in it, right? Like the crew's been like the crew broke up and now they got to get the crew back together. Right. So in that way, I could see maybe Dan calling up Kumail and being like, come on, what the heck? Like, right. But overall, I did enjoy it, but it was because I really liked a lot of these characters. And I was excited to see what was going to happen with them and where they were going. Not all of the characters, mind you, but I liked a lot of these characters.
So. Yeah. Overall, I liked that they introduced new characters. They did it in a different way. They shot it in a different way. And it felt like, it felt different. I think generally people are like, critics say, okay, the MCU format is plot, then a second third of the plot, and then fight a big bad all of a sudden. Woo! And then that's all done. It didn't feel like that to me for this film. Like,
So I'm going to pull up
a review.
Shang-Chi and look at what its scores were.
Which I still haven't seen.
Not available to everybody on, I think, the 14th of November, right, Disney Plus Day.
Right around the corner.
So we'll have to revisit that. Shang-Chi, Legend of the Ten Rings, 92% certified fresh on the Tomometer, 98% audience score. Loved the movie. I absolutely loved the movie. If you want to say just another Marvel movie, yeah, it is. Like, you talk about the format, introduce a new character, expand on their backstory, create a big bad, epic fight scene in the end. Like those same story beats, they're there. Like, it's you will get what you're expecting. So and the audience loves it, right? Huge scores. It's got comedy, it's got moments of just straight up silliness, and so yeah, it is true to the format. Eternals took a risk. It did not follow that same format. It arguably is a more grown up MCU movie because it deals with, you know, some deeper themes and things like that. The audience isn't responding the same way. The critics aren't responding the same way. I still think it was good.
I still think it was good. And to hell with anybody else.
Go see it. So go support Disney. They need your money. They're hurting.
Look, Disney
or,
is
or wait a few months. It'll be on Disney Plus too. So
All right. Well, I guess, Travis, we've talked enough about Dune, 1984, 2021, and the Eternals, and also my first class adventures from Cape Canaveral back to Los Angeles. We could talk about that later. Travis, I want to thank you for watching 1984.
And, absolutely.
So happy to talk about David Lynch stuff with you. So happy to discuss it with you, the listeners out there. Please go out there to @apothusiast on Twitter. Send us a message. Tell us what you thought of either films if you watched them.
Any, all of them.
Send us emails at apatheticenthusiasmshow.com at gmail.com. And yeah, we just thank you all for
these earlier, Brandon.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just fine. It's call to
just
action
wrap
at the
up
end.
The show.
It's a call to action. Long. Fuck. Fuck. Anyways, all right.
Join us this weekend, virtual Adult Swim Fest. Hang out with us as we watch other people go live. That's it. That's the show.
That's it. Hey, thank you one and all for listening. Be sure to go to Twitter at Apathy. later on, I think we're done.
Bye, I'm Travis. Bye.
Bye, I'm Brandon. Bye.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.